here I've used this X label command, and again I've used now a combination of LaTeX math and just normal text to do that. And there's this nice font size command, so you'll no longer have this problem where you can't read your axes anymore. Okay, so that's how I could label my axes. As I said, there's commands for specifying the range that I'm going to display on each axis. So maybe, as I said, maybe on my y-axis, I don't want to show such a big range so that I can appreciate this other curve a little bit more. So maybe I want to do a different range instead. You can see my legend actually moved. By default, it'll move it to a nice location that will look good, but you can also specify the location if you want. Okay, another one that I think is really useful is the ticks command. So by default, in this case, I find sometimes it, especially when you have ticks with lots of decimal places, sometimes it gets a bit overwhelming having so many ticks displayed on a plot. So for this case, for example, I could say that I only want ticks at 0, 1, 2, and 3 instead of all those numbers in between. And maybe I want to increase the font size again. Then I get something like that. Also, maybe you have cases where you want to display something specific on your axes. You can do that too. And they don't even have to be linearly spaced, these ticks, even though that's what we would usually do. But let's say, for example, I want to label 0.5, like 1.4, and then 3.5. I just want to label those points. And I don't want to actually display those numbers. Maybe I want to display some text for some reason. And maybe I want my font to be even bigger there. So now you can see that it's gone to the locations I said on the x-axis, and it's put ticks at 0.5, 1.4, and 3.5, but instead of labeling the numbers, it labels some text that I told it to label on there. Just a few other commands you can do with the legend. You can again specify the font size, because it's always really small by default. Also, sometimes I find I'm trying to plot maybe a lot of curves and it's really hard to fit the legend in a way that looks really good. One thing you can do is you can just remove the frame on that legend. It can give you a little bit more space sometimes. So if I do frame on equals false, now I don't have that box around it. It can just enable you to have more flexibility in where you put it. Right now it's not a big deal. We could put it anywhere, but sometimes you might have plots that you're trying to show a lot of different things. Okay, any questions about this kind of simple plotting stuff? Maybe it's just me that finds it super fun. I can spend like hours adjusting plots. I think it's really nice to make them like as nice as you can make them, but anyway. Okay, so this is kind of the most basic plotting command that you would use, and this would usually be your first tutorial into using matplotlib. But there's other commands as well that we can look at. So one is a scatter plot. So this one can actually just be pretty similar to the plot command depending what you're doing with it. So if I do just, I have some data that I've defined here, and I just do scatter plot of x and y. In this case, I could have just done this with the plot command if I just removed the lines there. But the cool thing about scatter plotting is that you can also, rather than just having the same color for all data and the same size for all your points, you can modify that. So that kind of gives another dimension of what you're explaining. So if I go down here, for example, in addition to having X and Y, I also can have different colors and different sizes that are also arrays. Then, this is a cool example I found online. I think it just looks really neat. So if you do plot.scatter here. So first I have my data, X and Y, but then with this function, I can also have an option C that takes an array. So in my case, my array of colors is called colors. My array of sizes, it goes in this argument X, and I just called that sizes. And then you have to specify a color map. There's one by default, but you can experiment with these different ones. There's many, again, but I've just put some in the comments up here. This is going to tell you how colors get mapped from numbers. So my colors array here is just a set of numbers. I somehow have to go from numbers to some colors. So this kind of tells you how that spectrum works. So I think this one is actually the default in lots of systems, but I'm just going to specify it so you see the notation. So if you type this, you get a really cool looking plot, I find. Oh, or not. What did I do? Oh, it's called CMap, not color map. And then, of course, I have to do my plot.show command. Yeah, so you get something kind of neat like this. So every point can have a different color, a different size. In my case, I just did things that are random, but you could have cases where the size or the color of something is meaningful. And I'm kind of plotting four-dimensional data on a two-dimensional plot, essentially, with this. So you can play with different colors here, too. Okay, so just two more things I want to show you from matplotlib. So the next one, does anyone need me to go back to anything? I don't know if I'm going too fast. You should let me know. No? Okay. So the next thing is, again, it's similar to this plotting command. It takes a lot of the same arguments, has a lot of the same options, but sometimes you might want to also have error bars on your plot. So I've given an example here. I have my x variable and my y variable, but maybe they both have some error. You also could, often I just make plots where there's only error in the y direction, but you could have it in both directions. So I just defined that in some random way here. Then kind of the simplest way to do that is plt.errorbar, and then we plot x and y, but we have this x error argument. So in this case, that'll be my array that I've called dx. And then, if I plot that, I get something like this. So by default, again, it doesn't have any markers for the points, but it puts lines connecting all my points, and it puts error bars to display the error of every point. And as before, there's lots of ways you can play with this. So I usually think it's nicer to have these little markers there showing your data points. I can specify the width of my error bar. These are just some more parameters that I can have. So maybe I want my error bars to be wider than the lines that are connecting. So I'm going to have a really thin line here, but I can have thicker lines there. And you can also put caps on them. And then in the end, you would get something like that. Any questions so far? No? Okay, last thing that I think can be useful. It's not actually the last thing I think could be useful. There's many useful things, but another thing that you might like to know how to plot is a histogram. So, for example, maybe I want to see what the random numbers look like from a distribution that I'm studying. So if you remember this rand n command, maybe I'm taking a whole bunch of samples from there. Then I can do a histogram of this. And I'm going to get something like that. By default, it doesn't have very many bins, so it's making my histogram based on just, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 10 bins. So I can change that. I can say, maybe I want this to be giving me more detail, finer binning. I can have 100 bins, then I'll get something more like that. You can also specify this rather than just putting a number. You can put a whole list of numbers there. They don't even have to be equally spaced. So right now, it's just kind of looking at the minimum and maximum range of your data, and it's binning it, but you could, there's lots of ways that you can specify that more carefully too. Can even do 1,000 bins on that too. Okay. Maybe that'll take too long. Yeah, can be really fine. Okay. So now I want to move on to talking just a little bit about how you can use Python to fit data, because that's another thing I use Python for a lot. But first, any questions about plotting at all? Yeah, yeah.
There's a useful function called plt.savefig.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I meant to show that. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go. Let's do this one. Thank you. I actually had that in there. That's really, really useful for sure. If you want to make a presentation or, yeah, you definitely need that command. So right now I just have these plots in my notebook, but of course it could also be useful to save them so that I can access them elsewhere. So then you can save them, I think, in different formats. I usually do mine as PDF. So maybe I'm going to call this just hist.pdf. And then there's different ways you can specify the margins that it's going to output, but especially when you do different adjustments to your sizes and things like that, it doesn't always output it correctly unless you put this second argument. So it'll just fix the margins. I think in this case it would have been okay because I didn't really modify anything, but in some cases you really need that one. And for me, I know when I was playing with this yesterday, it doesn't work if you put that save fig command after your show command. You have to save it first. Otherwise, when it shows it, I think it wipes what it's considering a figure. So then you'll just be saving something blank. So you have to make sure that save fig command goes before. So now, if I go again, just as with those data files that I was saving, it's just going to save this by default into the same directory where my notebook is stored. Now I see that I have a PDF version of this nice plot saved that I could use somewhere else in a paper, in a presentation, whatever. Anything else I missed? Yeah, what else? Yeah, tell me.
So an equivalent thing to the bbox inches tight is just to plot plt.tightlayout, tight underscore layout. And then that's useful when you have multiple figures because it will automatically adjust the spaces between figures for them to nicely.
Oh, okay, cool. So what was that? Plt dot?
Tight underscore layout.
And this is to save it or this is just
to? Yeah, just save it without the bbox argument and then should be fine.
This 2.pdf.
Just run tight layout and then save after that.
Oh, I see. Sorry. Okay. So do this. I want to try this on, because in this case, I think this command doesn't really do anything. So let's, because at the time where I needed it was this one where I made all these million adjustments. So let's try it here. And then plt.save fig g versus t. Like this? Is this going to work?
I think so.
No, that's wrong now. Oh, I have to redefine the data. There we go. Okay. Nice. Cool. Usually I actually, there's also other things you can do where you can actually control really exactly what this margin is. Like sometimes I find even I don't like this being so wide. So there's other ways you can be really picky about the margins it gives. But yeah, these are just commands that work most of the time, I guess, if you don't want to be too picky. Yeah, awesome, that's good. Anything else? Not just you, anyone. Okay, so we just have maybe 10 minutes left. So,
what's here?
I don't know if everyone got to copy this one down fully, but. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is the SciPy library. So this is another library that's really useful when you're doing scientific computing in addition to NumPy. And I've just kind of given you a list here of a lot of things it can be used for. This is actually not even all of it. These are just some things you might find useful. So we actually already used SciPy in the tutorial yesterday when we needed these gamma functions. So those are implemented in that library. Maybe if we want to do integration, different kinds of optimization, including fitting, which we're actually going to do just below, interpolation, Fourier transforms. There's also linear algebra implemented here, and then different things you might want to do with statistics. So there's a lot of functionality. You can read about a lot of these things and more things. Again, you can spend forever talking about Python, so I'm just kind of showing you guys things that I use a lot, but I'm there's so many other things that are useful. So here I'm just going to show you a function that's called curve fit within the scipy.optimize module. So the arguments that I need to give are just the function I want to fit to, as well as the x and y values of my data. And then it's just going to do a least squares fit. And it's going to output the optimized values of your parameters and a covariance estimate of those parameters. Okay, so here I've just given a set of data that I might want to fit to. So I can actually plot. Let's just start by just plotting that data, actually. So maybe I want to plot just I usually plot my data when I'm fitting without the lines. I think it can be easier to see. Okay, so I just have some data like this. I want to do some kind of a fit to it. So maybe first, so the way I generated this random data is that I started from a square root function and then I just added some random noise to it. So the first thing we can do is maybe let's just fit to a square root. So I'm going to call this, I can call this function anything I want, but I'll call it f1. So first it has to take the data points as input, and then the arguments after that are all parameters that you're going to fit within your routine. So in this case, I'm just going to return some coefficient times the square root. And I should probably find that when I do this fit, that this coefficient a that it fits should probably be close to 1, because that's what I used to generate my data. And I just added some random noise. I would expect to get something fairly close to 1, but we'll see if that's actually the case. So now let's do a fit to this function f1. So I'm going to use what the function returns is my set of parameters and also an estimate on the error. We actually won't do anything with this covariance matrix right now, but you can look into it and try to read more into that if you want. There's also ways you can make this name shorter, this curve, so I don't have to type that whole thing every time. But I'm just typing all of it because I think it's useful for you to get really used to where things are and what you need to use if you want to look things up. So the notation that I use here is first the function that I want to fit to, which in my case is f1. So someone was actually asking me yesterday if Python can ever take functions as arguments. And here you see an example where you can. So rather than this being an array or a number, this argument is actually a function that I'm feeding in. And you can actually do this with functions you define yourself too. Okay, and then it has to take the data point, the data as the other arguments. So I can do this, and then I can print out the parameters that it fits. Okay, and I can see when I do this, I get 0.9992, basically. So again, as I expected, something very close to one. And maybe I also want to plot this. So I can plot what it actually fit. I'm going to store this in an array called yfit1. So for this, I need to call this function. I'm going to put in my x data points. But as my second argument, I want to put the parameters that I fit. So what I do for that is I actually put POPT, and I'm going to put this star in front. What that star does is it unpacks this variable POPT. So if I go here, what this function actually returned was a list. But when I actually call this function, I don't want to give it a list. I just want to give it the actual value here. So using this star operator basically takes that value outside of the list. Or if it's more than one value, it puts all of them in there. I'll just write that. Okay, so now I have an array that's storing what my fit looks like, so I can plot that as well. And I'm going to just plot this as a line in this case, and maybe I'm just going to label that as f1. Okay, so I can see that when I do that, I get a fit that looks reasonable as a fit for my data. And just so to make sure everyone can see it, I'm going to make this legend font size bigger. Okay, we can also try, just for completeness, I can just show you, maybe we want to fit to something else, and maybe we also want it to have more than one parameter. So I can have as many parameters as I want after this x. So maybe I can fit to a logarithm, for example. I put a plus one in this bracket just so that my log doesn't have issues when I get close to zero in my data points. Or when I guess I have data points that are actually are zero. So okay, and I'm going to call this f2. Then I can just kind of copy this section. You could also write code to do this in a loop, by the way. I'm doing it kind of a lazy way. So now I want to optimize with f2, but my other two arguments are still my data points, so that's going to stay the same. Now I can output again what I get from that fit, and then now I'm going to store a new array that's yfit2, and for that I need to call my function f2. And then I can plot that again. Okay. Now you can see it put the legend in kind of a funny place by default. But, so now you can see this function f2, that's the green one. It also was a pretty reasonable fit to my data, but I needed two fitting parameters to do that rather than one. And so in this case, it's fitting it to a number times a log, and that number in this case is 1.95-ish, and then it has to subtract 1.87 to get this fit. So those are the values of the parameters in that function I defined. And you can try any function you want. You can try fitting, I don't know. Some things will look really bad, like a sine function, for example. It doesn't really describe my data very well at all. But you can do it if you want. Okay, so does anyone want to, again, because we're low on time, I just decided to show you fitting from this SciPy library, but there's lots of other things. Does anyone have anything they really like doing with SciPy they want to mention? No one? Okay. Well, yeah, I think learning to do these fits can be really useful. Yesterday, for example, in the tutorial, a lot of you guys were asking me questions about how things behave. And so by doing this, you could actually numerically study that. So actually, that's something we're going to do in this afternoon's tutorial. But now you can see how you would have the tools available to analyze some of the results, even ones you got yesterday. So, OK, so before we end today, I just wanted to talk about some other libraries. Some of these are ones that I find useful. Some of them are ones that you guys mentioned in the survey yesterday. So we don't really have time to go into them because there's just so many things you can do in Python. But I wanted to just mention them so that you just kind of know where you could look for different things. And again, this is not an extensive list. There's many more libraries and modules and tools you could look into. There's lots of things available for doing machine learning and for creating neural networks and deep learning models. So we'll use these if you take the machine learning from anybody physics course, one of the elective courses. We'll probably use TensorFlow for that, but there's also lots of functionality in libraries like PyTorch and Keras. So we were saying how Python, it can be very interactive because it's interpreted, not compiled. And lots of libraries like NumPy are already written in C so that they can be very fast because those modules are compiled. But you might want to compile other sections of your code to make them more efficient. Then you can use Cython or Numba. You might want to do extensive data analysis for large sets of data. And so pandas can be useful for that. There's several different libraries available for doing more advanced statistical modeling, Monte Carlo simulations. There's a debugger that you can look into. There's nice libraries for extracting data from websites and web scraping. And then I kind of mentioned before that matplotlib, that's one thing you can use for data visualization, but there's also other libraries you can look into, just depending on what you're trying to do. So you can look into Seaborn, Plotly. I haven't used those that much, but I was looking into them and they look pretty cool. So there's lots you can look into. And again, one thing people mentioned yesterday as one of the advantages of Python, there's a lot of really great documentation online. So a lot of these libraries that I'm mentioning here, they have really great online tutorials. So if anything kind of catches your eye, I'd really recommend just kind of doing a quick Google search and seeing what kind of good tutorials you can find. So does anyone want to add anything to this? Something that you think really needs to be on this list? Or something you would add to this list? No? Any questions? OK. Well, I'll see you guys this afternoon then.